be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military.
I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
Sometimes you have to go away to get away to relax. Enjoy an affordable staycation experience at Wind River Resort and Casino. Standard rooms only $89 a night, Sunday through Thursday. Call or book online now. 1-800-280-UWIN or windriver.com. Offering mobile check-in and check-out. Valid through March 20th.
Must have a River Club card. Some restrictions apply.
Use promo code WINTER21. Join us for a safe and comfortable stay at Wind River Resort and Casino.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today we're talking about Trinidad's Espiritu Series No. 2, crafted with tobaccos from Brazil and Nicaragua and wrapped in an Arapiraca leaf. Espiritu No. 2 produces a harmonious medium to full-bodied cigar with extraordinary zesty complexity and earthy notes. Come by the shop and pick up your Trinidad Espiritu No. 2 today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. Willing Hopping arrived in 1852 as a gold miner. He soon established and operated a butcher business at French Gulch until he was elected county sheriff. He then served from September 2, 1863 until 1867, and again he served from November 7, 1882 to 1892. In 1872, he was elected county judge and served until 1880. He was killed by an insane man in the Shasta Jail, who hit him on the head with a piece of firewood during his seventh term as sheriff on January 31, 1892. Hopping weighed a whopping 450 pounds and was gifted with musical talent. To find out more about Dottie Smith, go to the Shasta County Historical Society.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and hear us online at kcnr1460.com. Don't miss Armstrong and Getty, plus Ben Shapiro, and Free Fire Radio with Carl and Linda Bott, featuring special guests talking about local issues on KCNR. Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Orchard Nutrition Center, your local neighborhood health food store. We are dedicated to the healthy lifestyle, and we strive for a high standard to carry organic, GMO-free, and clean, healthy products.
Because you are worth it.
Because you are worth it.
Because you are worth it.
We have certified nutritionists on staff that take pride in helping you. Supporting local, we are all in it together. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt.
My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
Why wait for summer? Gear up for some fun right here in our own backyard and head down to Wind River Resort and Casino to play our
Gear Up 2021 Swipe to Win promotion.
Drawings Thursdays at 6, 7, 8, and 9 p.m. All winners receive bonus entries into the final drawings on February 25th.
Two motorcycles and a Can-Am quad.
And March 25th, a Yamaha ski boat.
From Reading, Yamaha Sea-Doo.
Join us for a safe, comfortable, and fun gaming experience at Wind River Resort and Casino. More drawings, more winners, more fun.
WindRiver.com.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. Don't miss Free Fire Radio weekday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding routes, pop culture, and unsung heroes in the North State. From 7 to 10, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR also has an incredible weekend lineup, including The Flatline, Jefferson State of Mind, Sovereign Minds, and We the People on KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at KCNR1460.com.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR. Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Reading, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
It's the Ramsey Show, talk radio where debt is dumb and cash is king. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Pulse Urgent Care at 100 East Cypress Avenue would like to thank you for your support during 2020. Pulse is happy to announce they are reopening their urgent care services and are accepting patients by appointment only between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. on weekdays and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. Pulse follows public health guidelines. Masks are required along with social distancing. Please call ahead at 530-722-1111 for a screening, appointment, and further information.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is the Legal Edge.
California State Senator Brian Jones recently introduced the Religion is Essential Act. For future emergencies, this bill will protect religious organizations from discrimination and any health, safety, and occupancy requirements that will impose a substantial burden on a religious service.
Learn more about our ministry and get exclusive email updates by registering for the Legal Insider at pji.org.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
The best investment is in the tools of one's own trade. Benjamin Franklin.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Today's question is, what kind of software is best to use to write a book? And what about formatting that book?
My pastor has this saying. People would ask him all the time, what's the best version of the Bible? And his answer is always, the one you'll read. To answer this question, I would say the same thing. The one you'll actually write the book in.
The one you'll use. Every piece of software has its benefits, its negatives. You need to find the one that works for you.
We're approaching this question because we see it all the time. This episode, we are just talking about the different options that are out there, our experiences with them, so that you can know where to start in your own research.
So we're talking about software programs that help from the beginning to the end of the publishing process. Let's starting with writing the book, the best software pieces to write the book. There are many, but the simplest ones are, of course, Microsoft Word, Google Docs, LibreOffice.
And my personal favorite, pen and paper.
Typewriter for funsies.
The non-writing world will automatically think Microsoft Word. That's what I do my typing in. That's when I am writing my essays for school in. That's going to be the default that a lot of people go to.
One problem with Microsoft Word, there is a cost. I personally don't like it because of that.
That's also why I use LibreOffice. It's a useful tool for people who are not wanting to be online constantly while they're writing, if you don't have great Wi-Fi or whatever where you are, but you want to get a bunch of text just on a page.
LibreOffice, Google Docs, Microsoft Words, they're all simple writing tools. I think Microsoft Word and Google Docs have basic spell check and grammar check designed into them. My biggest problem, though, aside from cost, is that you have to manually save. I prefer Google Docs personally because it auto-saves everything I do, and I won't lose my work.
A lot of people are asking about voice-to-text as well. If you're on a computer, the Dragon speech recognition software is one of the more popular ones.
Phones are a great resource for this. I know someone who has problems with their hands, so she writes almost solely through voice recognition on her phone to Google Docs.
There's one more name in this category that you're going to see fairly often, and that's Scrivener.
It's a little, I think, more advanced than your basic word processing. There's a few other different word processors like Scrivener, such as Living Writer and a few others. These can be useful for someone who wants a little more advanced help, but it does come at a cost. If you know how to write, if you're comfortable with that, and you have resources to get a good editor, then getting an advanced word processing software isn't absolutely necessary. Scrivener is also good for people who want to do other kinds of writing than just novel or fiction writing. I have not personally used it because I have ways to do them that are free.
Last thing I want to mention in this category is a program called Celtix. C-E-L-T-X is specifically for screenwriting and stage writing. That might be one you check out.
So let's get into the next step. Once you've written the book, your next step is to edit the book. Whether you are editing on your own or with someone else, there are different resources that can help you in this process. My preference is Google Docs.
Google Docs is nice because you can both be involved in the project at the same time. And instead of seeing that little red line and then making the changes to reflect that, you can either accept or decline the suggestion.
So it is very useful. Now, if you don't trust your editor as much as we trust each other, then...
find a different editor.
Or use Kami. Kami is a kind of plugin that allows you to do a lot of the same things with Google Docs of making comments and notes and suggestions on a PDF.
If you're looking that up, that's spelled K-A-M-I. Another suggestion I see a lot of people offer is Grammarly.
Grammarly is an active software that checks and suggests grammar, spelling, stuff like that. Like any grammar software, it is not 100% correct.
It's going to have a little bit more advanced suggestion tools than you're going to see in Google Docs and Microsoft Word, some of these other places. Of course, one of the classic tools in your editor's toolbox is going to be Microsoft Word with track changes. So you can turn on and off the track changes and see how it could read according to your editor's preferences.
Another resource, this is going to be more useful for books that need to be designed, so nonfiction books, is InCopy. It's a little bit more artistic and a little bit closer to the formatting end of the editing process than the editing process itself. And that's by Adobe. Look into it, research it before you invest in it, because it is not free.
The next software category that we want to look at is if you are designing your own cover.
If you're designing your cover and you don't have a lot of graphic design background, Canva can be a good resource. It's free. They have templates that have good designs to them already. However, if you use a template, you are not going to get a unique book cover by using a template. Look to them for inspiration and then create your own. Canva has elements that you can use all for free.
Speaking of free, the program that I use is called GIMP, which is basically Photoshop, but the baby version. Photoshop is obviously the preferred tool because it's now become a verb as well. But GIMP is the baby version of Photoshop and therefore free. And it does 90% of everything exactly how I want it to do it.
I prefer Photoshop. You have a lot of flexibility, a lot of resources. However, if you do not already have a copy of Photoshop, you have to pay for it. Along with Photoshop, you can also use Illustrator and InDesign. Both of these are good for creating graphics. Illustrator is used for vector creation, vector designs. So if you are creating something that looks like V.E. Schwab's A Darker Shade of Magic cover, that is all vector design. You can do that in Illustrator. Don't do that if you don't know graphic design.
So in order to find a picture for my book cover, I can just Google it, right?
No.
There are a couple of libraries you can go to and search for the type of image that you need. Google is not one of them.
There are websites that you can go to, Wikipedia Creative Commons. There's also Pexels, P-E-X-E-L-S, or Pixabay. Use all of these with incredible caution. While most of them are copyright free, sometimes ones that are copyrighted can be snuck in there by somebody who stole the copyright.
As we mentioned earlier, Canva has these pre-designed templates, which include your cover art in the collection.
But they also have a whole source of free-to-use pictures.
So after you have your cover, after you've written your book, after you've edited your book, it does need to be formatted before it goes out into the world. You can't just sell a Microsoft Word document. There are a couple of different programs that will do it to EPUB, which is going to be the most common way to do it, a digital ebook. The one that I've used a fair amount is called Calibre, C-A-L-I-B-R-E. It's unwieldy, but it's free.
The one that I found and used and actually really liked for my book was a program called Vellum. This is costly, but it is a one-time buy of the program. and it does the formatting automatically. You make certain settings, say that you want the certain size of book, and it'll spit out the formatting for you. And it's very intuitive. So before I tried Vellum, I tried Readsy. This one is free, it's online, it does the formatting automatically, but it took all of the double paragraph spaces that I had in my format for a scene break. It removed those. Readsy is just beginning. It is a new service that they offer, so they're still developing it and fixing things.
Definitely one to keep an eye on for the future.
And it functions a lot like Vellum does.
Of course, if you have Microsoft Word and you've used that for your first few because you have the whole office, then an easy one to lean on would be Microsoft Publisher, which I've mostly seen in newspaper editing. It's got some very interesting formatting for nonfiction styles of writing, if that's more what you're going for.
That, along with the Adobe InDesign, are very useful if you have a lot of images in your book. However, you have to do every page individually. This takes a lot of work, it is a lot of effort, but you get the most flexibility out of these two programs.
One thing that you're going to see a fair amount of that I really don't like is the PDF. It's easy. Basically, every program will export to it. Basically, everyone has a way to read a PDF, but they look amateur and it can be a bit of a mess. So who do I go to for printers?
If you are self-publishing, the biggest resource out there is Amazon. You submit your book, you can buy personal copies at printing cost, basically.
If you're looking to do a hardcover for something, Lulu offers printing in hardcover.
Barnes & Noble also has more kinds of formats than Amazon allows. Amazon is basically just paperback, and your options are glossy or matte for the cover.
The other option that I see a fair amount of is BookBaby, which looks like it's doing a lot of the same formatting. I haven't used them myself.
Another one that's becoming popular for printing the book and distributing is IngramSpark. They, I believe, are connected with the Ingram distributor, so it's a little bit easier to get into physical bookstores through using them, and they do the printing services. Don't take me on my word for that. I am still in the process of researching them. Whatever you choose, though, it needs to be right for you. The reason why there are so many options is because people are different. Find the one that works for you, for your needs, for your writing. Because what matters is that you have the freedom to
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. 1 Samuel chapter 17.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Essis. And today we are talking about basically just people, but magically bigger people.
That would be the giants. Now, we're not talking about Andre the Giant, giants, not people who are just incredibly tall. We are talking about actual mythical creatures, legends, tales of races of tall people.
Across the world, a lot of cultures show tall people as powerful people. I believe there are two different Shinto emperors who are reported to have been more than 10 feet tall. These huge giant people, literally very tall, makes them very powerful to see. So at first sight, if your hero is encountering a giant, they can be very intimidated without even talking to or encountering physically.
So when we're talking about these mythical giants, the biggest thing about them in most legends is that they're basically people, but big. They are sometimes slower, less intelligent, but always strong.
And I've found across my different studies of giants around the world, cannibalism is something that we see a lot of, or at least eating humans in some way. You know, grind your bones for bread kind of a mantra. We see that in a couple of different giant stories around the world.
I have a hard time siding with Jack on the Jack and the Beanstalk story. What would you do if somebody invaded your house and stole your stuff?
Probably exactly the same thing.
Maybe not eat them, but, you know.
Maybe smush them.
Yes. So let's get into some examples of giant or large, intimidating, strong creatures. Of course, you have your trolls and your ogres and your orcs.
And urukai, which are important.
Urukai!
A lot of the references to giants are an alternate race, similar to elves and dwarves, where they are human-like, but not. They aren't exactly gods. They aren't demonic in any way. They're mostly just a different kind of people.
In Norse mythology, you have the Jotuns.
And to be clear, the Avengers mythology as well.
Of course, the frost giants from Jotunheim are very based on this race of giants in Norse mythology.
There was a carving that was dated to about the 10th century AD of, I'm not going to try to pronounce the name because I'm going to butcher it, but one of the Jotun riding a dog like a horse, might have been a wolf. And she had, like, reins on it, but the reins were made of snakes. It was a very interesting depiction of, because most of the time when we see giants, we don't see them using tools in that kind of a sophisticated way. It's mostly like a club and smash Harry Potter in the bathroom.
If you want to look that up, I believe the pronunciation is Hyrokin. It's Hyrokkin.
And, of course, heading south to the Middle East, the Judeo-Christian history, we have the Philistines, which our opener was referencing, these gigantic warrior-type people.
Even if you aren't super familiar with the Judeo-Christian beliefs, you likely have heard the term Goliath. You've heard that and know that it references a giant, a huge human that is not easily defeated. So if we want to go down under to Australia, there is an oral tradition of a giant known as Crooked Mick.
If you're listening from the U.S., you probably know who Paul Bunyan is. Crooked Mick is like Paul Bunyan, but cooler. Not only does he like chop down stuff and shear sheep and such, but he makes great pies, apparently.
Not only are his pies good, but they are light, so light that a gust of wind can carry them away. And not only are pies getting carried away, if he kicks a crocodile, he can send it to the moon. Sorry, I'm having a really hard time keeping a straight face during this. I love this, and it's just so much fun that you've just got this, like, Australian bushman that's going out there kicking crocodiles and baking pies.
And generally doing everything that, you know, humans do, but way cooler. So you want to look that one up? That's Crooked Mick. And that's more legend than, like, people believed he actually existed. I mean, obviously, spurned from somewhere.
Again, much like Paul Bunyan.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have a giant that is super familiar because of its prominence in Greek and Roman tradition, and that's the Cyclops.
He's also familiar because he's the dude with one eye. Which is interesting because most of the depictions I see of the Cyclops, he has the holes in the face in a normal where humans would have eyes, but they're just sort of skinned over, and then he has a third eye at the top of the center of the forehead. I always thought that was weird. It wasn't like they were, like, merged, you know?
I'm just picturing the Cyclops and Hercules, the Disney animated version, where it's just, like, one big eye that's, like, half his face in the middle of his forehead. He has a very tall forehead as a result.
Most of the ones we've talked about so far are enemies of humans in some way. They're hunting them, they're smashing rocks and trying to kill the normal everyman.
Except for Crooked Mick, he's saving them from the crocodiles.
Okay, that's fair. I am talking about the Gentil, I believe it's pronounced. These are a race of giants found in the northern parts of Spain, close to where it meets France, in that little bay there. They existed, and they basically just hung out with the humans, and they were really known for their ability to throw rocks. And that's how a bunch of the little islands off the coast were formed. But they were said to have lived alongside the Basque people at one point.
They were also said to have invented metallurgy, the saw, and grew the first wheat, and then taught the humans how to farm.
Most of them disappeared when the comet flew across the sky around the same time that Christ was born. That was sort of a harbinger for them to go, okay, it's bedtime, and they basically just went and lived under a mountain.
There was one that was said to have remained, known as Olentzero, O-L-E-N-T-Z-E-R-O, and he's said to appear at Christmas and is reproduced as a straw doll.
And of a lot of the giants we find, these ones are furry, they're hairier. Until we get into more modern mythology and cryptozoology.
Fun cryptozoology. If we want to go a little coastal islander, in Fijian mythology, there is a giant who is so large that his teeth looked like they were burning logs. And that is why his name is Flaming Teeth.
Very original. So he basically tortured the humans in the village for so long that a bunch of warriors went, lured him under a big rock, and then pushed it over on him. He died, and his teeth were brought back to the village, which brought fire to the humans.
Fascinating.
We all have some sort of this is how humans got fire story, I think.
And it's never, hey, we boofed two rocks together and went, ooh, look, fire. And then if we go to Eastern Asian cultures and mythologies, the Hindu and Buddhist cultures have the Rakshasas, and they were depicted as shape-shifting, fierce-looking, enormous creatures with two fangs that protruded from the top of their mouth.
They have a lot of similarities between them and the modern Bram Stoker version of Dracula, of a lot of the vampire mythology, the shape-shifting, the eating people, especially their blood, needing to be invited into a building. These are all Rakshasa tropes that also appear with vampires, which we'll talk about in three episodes.
Yes.
These ones are a little strange because I didn't necessarily want to put shapeshifters in with giants because giants are naturally large creatures, and these ones can appear humanoid. But they are described as giant, larger than, scarier than humans, and with a lot more magical abilities than most giants we're going to see. And again, eating people is a thing.
So let's look into the literature and references to giants in fiction as we know it today in modern ages.
Of course, from Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels, we have the Brobdingnag, which is a giant and opposite the Lilliputians, which are the tiny people we talked about a couple episodes ago.
And Gulliver's, like, the normal-sized person in the middle?
Yep.
Okay. It has been a very long time since I've watched a movie that relates to that, and I've never read the book.
Yeah, it's been a while since I read the book. I didn't really follow most of it. I think I was a little too young for that. But if you're younger and you're looking for it, Roald Dahl has the BFG.
Big Friendly Giant. One of my favorites is actually Fezzik from The Princess Bride, portrayed by Andre the Giant. Absolutely love him. So great. And then the classic example, the Cyclops from Odyssey.
And the last one I just want to touch on, because I think this is how most people are familiar with giants and trolls and half-giants and such, is Harry Potter. We see trolls in the first book, and then one of the closest friends of the main characters is half-giant. They make fun of giant-type people a couple of different times, you know, just point and grunt. It's not that hard to talk their language.
Yeah, and in Harry Potter, the half-giants are especially considered, looked down on as lesser beings because of their mixed race.
So if I'm being plagued by a giant, how do I take it down?
Just make them fall over.
Okay. Crushing under their own weight. We see this a couple of different ways. We see that, of course, in Mickey Mouse had some of that. And I think the most classic version is Jack and the Beanstalk.
When he makes the giant fall off the beanstalk, chops it down while the giant's climbing down. Again, Jack invaded his house. What else was he supposed to do?
She's not going to let this die.
I'm not. Another thing when it comes to giants is the eyes tend to be vulnerable, especially with your cyclopses. The eyes and the face in general.
And I believe that's how the hero actually defeated the Cyclops, was he drove a spear or a lance into the Cyclops' eye. And then the Cyclops ran around going, "Nobody stabbed me in the eye," because he had convinced the Cyclops that his name was Nobody.
And in general, you deal with a giant the same way you would deal with a human. They're stronger, they're bigger, but they have the same kind of vulnerabilities. Their anatomy is generally the same. But they may be a little bit more invulnerable to magic.
Of course, you could go with the Princess Bride logic and the Fijian logic.
The moment his head is in view, hit it with a rock!
Seem to work for them. They have fire. And in general, most of the time, you're going to see your heroes be smarter and more agile than your giants. This goes back to your David and Goliath story of, okay, I have a power behind me that you can't take down, so I'm smarter, I'm faster, I'm going to whack you in the head with a rock. Even though I am smaller, I can still beat you.
D&D stats, they have better dexterity.
Yep.
I hope this information has helped you, given a few ideas about introducing a giant character or giant race into your stories. You can play with it. You can have fun with it. Remember, these are mythologies. These are malleable creatures that you can use and play with and do as you will.
And these are an easy one, I think, to slip in, because it's not like the Chimera, which we'll talk about next episode, where you have to describe this element and that element, and they're going to shoot fireballs and whatever at you because of the specifics of this particular monster. Basically, everyone in your audience goes, "Giant, right, I have an image of that in my head. I don't need a 3-page description in order to follow the plot."
So go out, create, have fun, put giants into your story, and always
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
By reading a lot of novels in a variety of genres and asking questions, it's possible to learn how things are done, the mechanics of writing, so to speak, and which genres and authors excel in various areas. Nicholas Sparks.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Our question for today in our continued Frequently Asked Questions series is, how do you know which genre your book is in?
See, the book I'm writing right now has magic, but it also takes place on Earth, and some of the problems are solved by a character falling in love, and most of the stuff that happens is action-based, where people are sword fighting and trying to kill each other. So is it fantasy? Is it historical? Is it romance? Or is it action-adventure?
Swords and sorcery.
Which is a subcategory of...
fantasy. Which is a subcategory of speculative fiction.
Which is a subcategory of fiction.
So, as you can see, there is a lot of things in genre. But there are a couple of questions that you can ask yourself to help you narrow down what genre your book is in.
Before we get into that, I want to make sure you, our audience, knows why this question is important. Well, I'm not asking this question. I know what genre my book is in. Or I don't care what genre my book is in. It's very dangerous for people who want to be career authors. If all you are doing is writing selfishly, you don't have to worry about genre. You have fun. We'll see you next episode. But if you ever want to sell any of your books, understanding your genre, understanding which shelf the bookstore puts it on, helps sell your book. Because if I am looking for an action-adventure novel, and I have to sift through cookbooks, then I'm not going to be as interested.
So if you want to know why you need to know, go back in our archives and search for target audience. We've talked about that before in an episode, I believe, in July. You can also look at our series from last March when we talked specifically about genres. We covered the basic ones, some of the specifics of, you know, cover design and plot of each of those. Today, though, we're not focusing on those aspects. We're just focusing on how to figure out what genre you're in.
Yeah, if you don't know which of March's episodes to look at to make sure it applies to your book, this is the right episode to start on.
So what is the first question that you need to ask yourself in order to figure out what genre you're in?
Is my book fiction or nonfiction? Fiction is defined as more or less false. Something that did not happen, you are not trying to convince anybody that it did happen. I am not trying to convince anybody that there is a conspiracy of vigilantes in my hometown. Nobody is trying to be sold on that idea. But if there were, here's a fun story that surrounds them. Nonfiction would be more of your self-help, your biography.
Memoirs. So if it actually happened, or if it's almost all based on true story, you are writing nonfiction. If you are writing fantastical things that you made up in your head, or things that are loosely based on what actually happened, you are writing fiction.
Technically, fairy tales and allegories fall into the fiction category. Those are the ones that you want people to understand and think about, but they aren't something that actually happened.
A sub-question of fiction or nonfiction is, what's the age range of the book? Are you writing for children? Are you writing for middle grade? Are you writing for young adults? Are you writing for adults?
Understanding that helps the bookstore put the book in the right location. Because if I'm writing about cats that all have this secret life after they leave the house in the morning, they go out and have adventures and then they come back home and then sleep in their beds, your kids might love that story.
Your adults, not so much.
They're not going to be as intrigued, mostly because the stakes aren't terribly high. It's a cat.
So the fun thing with age range is it becomes more vague the older you get. Because you have adults who like to read YA. But you don't have many, you know, 5-year-olds who like to read Tolkien.
Yeah, I think it was Lewis who said, anybody can write a book targeted for adults, but it takes a specially skilled author to write something for children.
Yes. So look at that, then move on to your next questions.
The next big question you have to ask yourself is, when and where is your book set? So if your book is set in Redding, California, in the year 2020, okay, we've eliminated a whole bunch of genre by saying that particular information. We know it's probably not going to be fantasy, might be urban fantasy. We know it's not likely to be sci-fi, it's not likely to be a Western.
It's definitely not going to be historical.
If it takes place in the near future on Mars, understanding the setting, the location, will tell you it's going to be probably a hard science sci-fi.
It could be a soft science sci-fi, but definitely sci-fi.
If it's in the near future, more often than not, it's hard science. If it was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away,
it's fantasy sci-fi.
Yep. The softest of sci-fis.
So sometimes people can get a little bit confused about the fantasy and the sci-fi here, because the where isn't so different. The location could be a completely fictional place, a planet somewhere that doesn't exist, that things happen on that planet. So the difference of where with fantasy and sci-fi isn't so different. It's whether it's magical and problems are solved with magic, or whether it's technological and problems are solved with technology. And that goes into our next question, is what's the problem?
We've mentioned before, a story is a problem and its solution. If you don't know what the problem of your story is,
you don't have a story.
Your story should have both an internal and an external problem, if you're following the hero's journey map. But if the story is, my character is lonely, and then at the end they fall in love, that's going to tell you about the genre that I'm writing. If the character is in danger and they find safety at the end, that's going to tell you about the genre that I'm writing. That's clearly an adventure story. We are talking about the main big problem in your story. This is how you define your genre.
Subplots are different. You can have a fantasy novel with a romance subplot, but your actual genre is the main problem, which is the world is ending, and they happen to fall in love in the process, so it's romance subplot subgenre.
But the world ending is the problem that's being solved. Understanding this about your own book will help you define the final elements of your genre.
So let's look at some very specific genres. So you have the main headers. You have fiction. Under that, you have fantasy, romance, sci-fi, action, thriller, horror, suspense, mystery, young adult.
Basically everything except for our nonfiction episode in March.
But you have smaller genres in that. Subcategories of every single one of these that can really help you hone in on your target audience to make sure you're finding the right ones. Go to Amazon. This list is huge.
So for our notes, I figured, okay, well, because Amazon is one of the world's largest book retailers, I would go and see what their lists are, what their genres are. I just pulled from the fiction section, because most of our audience are fiction authors in some way. We have 3 pages of different kinds of genre, and some of the subcategories under that would still be your main genre. So Toxic, your book, is
technically mystery is its main genre, and it has a couple of subcategories. I've actually realized it's not so cozy because it's less humorous than most other cozy mysteries. You definitely have the woman sleuths. You have a little bit of the cozy mystery because cozy mysteries have the amateur sleuth aspect. The main character usually has a hobby or a profession that isn't actually police related. So it's Cozy Mystery, it's Woman Sleuths, it's...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.